The third element that we bring up in terms of elements of a profession is a high degree of self-control of behavior. One of the things that the professions have in common is that they typically control themselves. Who controls the actions of the whole medical profession? Generally, the medical profession does. Who controls the dental profession? The dental profession. So one of the deciding factors in determining whether or not a profession is truly a profession, or is maybe something called a sub-profession or a semi-profession, is who controls that profession. Case in point here is the nursing profession. We use the word profession in conjunction with nursing a good bit. But a question that comes up occasionally is, who controls the nursing profession? And the answer, you know, to some degree is nurses do, but it's generally the medical profession controls the nursing profession. So the nursing profession may be slightly lacking in terms of being a full profession. When we consider there is not much autonomy in the nursing profession, largely nurses work for doctors. They work in institutions that are run by doctors. So in terms of who controls the nursing profession, nurses do somewhat, but there's certainly a degree of control by the medical profession. So self-control of behavior. How do we do this? How do we control ourselves in the professions? There are several mechanisms that come into play here. At Sherman College, we're very familiar with some of these. One of them is through accrediting bodies. For many, many years, the medical profession had an accrediting body that controlled medical schools, and it was called the AMA. It was a particular little office of the American Medical Association. Dental schools controlled by, guess what? ADA, American Dental Association. When it came to chiropractic and the first accrediting bodies that were involved in chiropractic education, they were closely affiliated with the ACA and the ICA, the American Chiropractic Association and the International Chiropractors Association. Those two bodies were the first accrediting agencies in chiropractic. The accrediting agencies that have grown up since then are supposedly separate from those professional associations, but there still is maintained a good bit of closeness there. The CCE, the accrediting agency that we're very familiar with, for many, many years, if you wrote to them, guess what? Their address was, you know, Grand Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa. Anybody else have that same address? Yes, the ACA had the same address. So the ACA, the CCE had the same address. They did have different phone numbers. Their zip code was the same, though. Their office, guess what? Same building. So the high degree of correlation and conjunction between professional accrediting agencies and professional associations. What a coincidence. So through accrediting agencies, you might say, well, how does that control the profession? Accrediting agencies set standards for the educational institutions involved in professions. And when we are able, through an accrediting agency, to set the standards for education, we control the profession. If an accrediting agency says, in order to be accredited by this body, your college is going to have to meet the following standards, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One of them might be, the admission standards. We know that accrediting agencies set admission standards, and one of the goals of the chiropractic accrediting agencies over the years has been to raise the quality of the people within the chiropractic profession. How do we do that? We keep raising educational standards. Back when even as early as the early 70s. You could come to chiropractic college right out of high school, and many people did. Until 1974, you could go to chiropractic college out of high school. If you didn't have a high school diploma, you could get a GED and go to chiropractic college. It was not unusual that people 18 years old, 17 years old, would enter chiropractic college because they had finished high school. And there was no prohibition to that. Starting in 1974, the chiropractic profession kicked in the 2-year prerequisite. And at that point, they said, you have to have 2 years of college. Doesn't matter in what, we don't care what the subject matter, you just have to have 60 hours of college. The idea being, that makes a, that gives us our general education requirements, that makes us a more well-rounded person and able to be a better professional eventually. Their idea was raising the standards of the profession by raising the number of college courses you had to take. So the chiropractic profession was fairly late getting into that particular ball game, the idea of having prerequisites. So 1974, Sherman College started. 1973, the first several classes entering Sherman College, many people in those classes had no college training, they had only high school diplomas. That was all that was required. That was legitimate entry into chiropractic college at that point. So raising the standards means adding credits. After having a two-year prerequisite for a while, then CCE changed their stance and said, well, you have to have 2 years of college in the sciences. And they started getting real specific about which courses you had to take. And they then said you have to have chemistry, biology, you have to have particular courses. The next big step after chemistry and biology was to plug in organic chemistry. They said, oh yeah, you have to have a year of chemistry, a year of biology, and now a year of organic chemistry. After that came along, they said, oh yeah, you have to have a year of chemistry, a year of biology, a year of organic chemistry. Oh, let's throw in physics, a year of physics. And boy, did that cause some consternation in the chiropractic profession. That's why those of you listening to this tape now had to have a course in physics. Haven't quite figured out yet what it has to do with chiropractic, but somebody decided that was important, and you have got to have a year's worth of physics before you can get to chiropractic school now. So upping the standards. You all know, I presume, that we as the chiropractic profession were scheduled in the year 2000, last year, from when I'm making this tape, we were scheduled to require a bachelor's degree starting in the fall of 2000. All the chiropractic colleges, through their accrediting agency, the CCE, were set to say, you have to have a bachelor's degree before you can come to chiropractic college. That got postponed, and it got postponed for very, very practical reasons. Enrollment in chiropractic colleges went down. All the chiropractic colleges were afraid of the financial repercussions of adding in a bachelor's degree prerequisite. They're saying that's going to limit our pool of applicants. We're going to have fewer and fewer people applying if we say you have to have a bachelor's degree. So seeing the writing on the wall, they decided to postpone that a bit. But guess what? It's coming. We will, in the foreseeable future, perhaps the next few years, 2, 3, 4 years, it will be a prerequisite before you enter chiropractic college. You must have a bachelor's degree to get in. So that's coming. That is a perfect example of our profession controlling itself. Nobody outside our profession is putting those restrictions on us. It's us. We're doing it from inside. And we're doing it supposedly to make the profession better, to increase the quality of the chiropractic applicant, the chiropractic student, and the chiropractic graduate. We're supposed to do that. Whether or not that in fact is working is up for some debate. A lot of people say all that does is cloud up your mind and make you more likely to go into the practice of chiropractic medicine or move chiropractic toward the therapeutic model of medicine. And a lot of the straight chiropractors don't like the fact that we are increasing the prerequisite standards all the time. And it seems bound to happen, and mark my words, we'll have a bachelor's degree prerequisite very soon in chiropractic. It's coming. So we're controlling our own profession. The idea is up the standards. Another way that we control our own profession is through some of the semi-government agencies or quasi-governmental agencies like boards of examiners. If a board of examiners in a particular state makes a particular rule that in order to sit the board in this particular state, you have to have a certain course in your chiropractic college, they're controlling the profession that way. We have examples of that going on right now. Right now in California, the California State Board has dictated to the profession that if you're going to get a license in California, you have to have a physical therapy course, and that's been there for a long time, but now they're saying that physical therapy course must be given and transcribed in your own college. You can't take it, you can't outsource it, in other words. Palmer College, Life College, Sherman College, people who want to go to California have been getting into California by taking all their regular courses in chiropractic college in their college and then going out somewhere else and taking a physical therapy course that qualified, and that would get you into California. California is now changing the rules and saying, oh no, you can't do that, you have to take the course in-house. It has to be offered in your school. Of course, we run into the philosophical argument now with Palmer, Life, and Sherman not wishing to engage in physical therapy within our own walls. We've always liked the idea of outsourcing it. If you have to take it, go somewhere else and take it. Florida has had the same situation for years. You have to take a course in physical therapy, so people who attend those colleges that don't give it in-house have to go somewhere else and get it. And now we're seeing states starting to wag the tail wagging the dog here by saying, no, you have to offer that course in your own school. So we have a battle going on right now, 2001, with California. They have recently given us an extension on that rule for one more year. We have one more year to iron this issue out. Their regulations of the board say we must offer a course in Sherman College in order to get you licensed in California. So we have that little difficulty going on. The other way that we control professions sometimes from within, other than the boards of examiners, we run into examples of if you want to have hospital privileges, you have to be a member of a certain organization. For a long time, the medical profession put this extra little stricture on, saying if you want to have hospital privileges, you can be a regular medical doctor in practice, but if you want to have hospital privileges, you're going to have to be a member of the AMA. That's a certifying sort of requirement. We have things like that in chiropractic. If you want to do certain things, you have to be a member of a certain organization. So that's another example of self-control of the behavior of our profession. Anyway, those come up, and we do control ourselves. We have the ability to dictate to ourselves actions that we think are going to improve our profession, make it better, either for ourselves or for the public, and to control those behaviors. Professions have that built in. If you're in a semi-profession, you may not have that built in. And I use the example of nursing. If you're in the nursing profession, you may have the medical professional wagging the dog, and we run into this sometimes. If you're a teacher these days, do you really have self-control? You know, I know we have organizations like the National Educators Association, the National Federation of Teachers, American Federation of Teachers. We have those. But how much control do they really have on what teachers do in the school systems? One of the disadvantages of being a teacher in the school system is somebody else decides what you teach. If you're going to teach in a typical American school system, you work for the government. You don't work for yourself. You don't have much autonomy. You have to teach what somebody else tells you to teach. The syllabus for your course will be pre-dictated by somebody else. The textbook that you use will be dictated by somebody else. And so really all you do as a teacher is plug yourself in, and you have a little bit of autonomy in how you present the information, but not much. So one of the strictures on the education profession is who's in control there. And the controlling issue in the education profession, in American public education system, is that that teachers don't have a lot of control about what they teach. At the university level, it gets a little better. In the private school sector, it gets a little better. But not too many teachers really have autonomy, meaning they get to decide their hours. Can you decide if you're a public school teacher that you want to teach from 3 in the afternoon till 11 at night? Don't think so. You're going to be there from 8 to 4 because that's when the schools operate. And you're going to operate on a set of pre-existing rules without a lot of freedom in certain areas. You may have, you know, freedom to have a ponytail if you want, but you're not going to have much freedom in terms of what you teach in American history class. It's pre-dictated. One of the weaknesses of the educational profession, some people say, is they don't get to make their own decisions. As a chiropractor, as a healthcare provider, we get to make certain decisions on our own. If you want to have office hours 3 in the afternoon to 11, that's your business. You can do it. You're the boss. If you want to do things a certain way, you can do that. Okay? But there, more and more, we're running into other people dictating what we do. If you're going to be a Medicare provider these days, you have a governmental agency telling you how to be a chiropractor. You have to go along with it if you're going to participate in that system. You still have the option not to participate. If you're going to deal with certain insurance programs, certain managed care programs, you have to do it their way or you can't do it. But you still have the autonomy to say, I don't deal with that. Many people who are doing the cash practice option these days are doing so because they don't like being dictated to by somebody outside the profession. The bean counters, the accountants are running our profession by running the numbers. And when you have to call up an insurance company to get permission to take care of a patient, it irritates chiropractors, and I don't blame them. We get a little irritable about that. When you have to call someone at an insurance company, and guess what? It's usually a nurse. And you have to say, well, I have a patient presenting with such and such, this problem, this problem, this problem. And the nurse will say, hang on, please. And 5 minutes later, she comes back and says, okay, you can adjust this patient 3 times. You got 3 visits to fix them. Let us know if you need more. And we get a little irritated about that.